From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, and this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. This week, as lawmakers debated how and whether to reopen the economy, city officials in Laconia decided to postpone Bike Week. Protesters continue to speak out against the stay-at-home order, which Governor Sununu is planning to speak about publicly later today. And how is Vermont making decisions about whether to reopen its economy? We're going to take a broad look at COVID-19 news today, and we'd like to hear from you. And we're going to start today's program with a conversation about Laconia and the Lakes region. If you live in Laconia or the Lakes region, we want to hear from you during this part of the show. What are your concerns about this upcoming summer tourist season? Are you hoping to see some easing of restrictions? Are you concerned about moving too quickly? The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send your questions or comments by email. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org. And with us now is Laconia Mayor Andrew Hosmer. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
So the City Council voted this week to postpone Bike Week from June to August. What went into that decision?
Well, an awful lot went into that decision, as you can imagine. First and foremost was the health and safety of not only the residents of the city of Laconia, but also the surrounding areas, as well as the people who traditionally gather by the tens of thousands in the city. As you alluded to in your introduction, people are very anxious about the economy and is it going to bounce back and when is it going to bounce back? And we are a travel and tourism destination here in the Lakes region, particularly Laconia. We are very dependent on people coming to visit our beautiful area and spending money. So the idea of postponing it when we're in an economic downswing like this was a very difficult decision, but ultimately we wanted to err on the side of public health. And though it wasn't the easiest decision, the fact is postponing it to August seemed like the proper and responsible thing to do.
And for those who don't know about Bike Week, just how big an event is it, and what kind of businesses might benefit from having Bike Week?
Sure. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people, and depending, it's a little difficult to gauge exact numbers, but it is significant. The businesses that really benefit certainly are our hotels and our motels, our resorts on the lake, our restaurants, our gas stations, our convenience stores. It really benefits everyone up and down the economic ladder because it is such a shot in the arm every single year. And certainly if the weather is with us, it's an even bigger shot in the arm. So it really affects everyone here, and we take a great deal of pride in it. So again, the hard part of making this decision, it wasn't going to make everybody in the city happy. But ultimately, if we are healthier and safer because of it, I think that's a good decision.
And has there been much pushback for this decision?
There are some concerns. Certainly, I think what we have to understand is there are a lot of businesses, particularly small businesses, that are hanging on by their fingertips and worried that no one is going to come and eat at their restaurant or stay at their resort. And that is, people are anxious to say the least, but in some instances, downright frightened about the possibility of losing a business. So, I think we have to remember how difficult that is, and they have some concerns, and they're trying to, in their own minds, balance the risk of opening maybe a little too early, but starting up a business and getting some revenue. There has been a little bit of pushback, and clearly the third week in August seemed like a very reasonable alternative, but that interrupts the third week of August and some of the plans and some of the reservations that various resorts and motels in the area have. So, I told people, we had to make a decision between a choice that wasn't so good or a choice that was worse. The worst choice we could make, I think, is to cancel Bike Week in its entirety. No one wants that. A less bad choice, if you will, was right now the third week in August. So that's where we're at right now.
And of course, let's be honest, I mean, we don't exactly know how the rest of the year is going to go. It could be that you do end up having to cancel it. You're not making that call now, but if the stay-at-home order is in place or it goes back into place if there's another outbreak of COVID-19? That must be a possibility, yes?
Well, it certainly is. And I think we have to remain sort of nimble in this. We have to be responsive to the evidence and the facts and the direction from the CDC, as well as the New Hampshire Department of Health and Human Services. So it is, as I said, it's a very fluid situation. And I hope we don't get to that point, but it is a realistic possibility based on, a pandemic will go as a pandemic goes. We can't wish our way out of it.
And of course, Bike Week is just one of many events in local businesses rely on in the upcoming summer months, a major economic driver of the region. There is a lot of uncertainty, but what do you think you can tell us about what the next few months are going to look like in your area?
Well, it's of course difficult to predict, but what I can, if I were to look back over the past 6 weeks or so, what I can tell you is that the city of Laconia is remarkably resilient, and it's trying times like this that I think we really see the strength of our communities. We see people reaching out and coming together. And I've been so impressed with our first responders who are putting their health and safety on the line every day. I'm so impressed with our teachers who have transferred to remote learning and have done a remarkable job. Groups like Got Lunch Laconia and making sure that our citizens are fed. I have very optimistic in these dark days that we will continue to pull together as a community and serve those that are most vulnerable. Once we get through the other side of this pandemic, whether it's at the end of the summer or whether it's into 2021, I know we'll be a stronger community because of it, because I think we are certainly have been empowered that we are a resilient and community that perseveres in the face of these challenges.
Listeners, if you have questions or comments about how the Lakes Region is handling this COVID-19 pandemic, if you live in Laconia and you have a question or comment for your mayor, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. Andrew Hosmer, Laconia Regional General Hospital has had to furlough roughly 40% of its workforce, about 600 positions, people rather. How concerned are you about the hospital's ability to get back to serving the community?
Well, I'm tremendously concerned. And, it's been valiant efforts on behalf of all of those at Lakes Region General Hospital for years now to try and ride out what we have as a very fragile and in some ways a dysfunctional healthcare system, not only in our community or state, but across this country. I think the story that we're seeing emerge from Lakes Region General Hospital is indicative of what's going on in many more rural hospitals across this country, and that we have a hobbled healthcare delivery system. Our hospital here reflects our community, and as many people know, we have pockets of great wealth, but we also have pockets of poverty. We have an aging population. We have an underinsured population. We have a higher percentage of Medicaid recipients, and that is a very difficult business model for any hospital to manage. Lakes Region General Hospital has done great up until now, but really the COVID and the elimination of surgeries has crippled them, and they lost 60% of their revenue when they had to eliminate surgeries. So I'm very concerned about the economic impact, the well-being of those that have been furloughed, but I have to remain optimistic that with some of the federal relief coming through, and certainly some of the relief coming through from the state level, which is greatly appreciated, we've been able to stabilize our hospital at this point. But the long-term fix is really what we're focused on right now. We need these jobs. We need this hospital. We need it for public health, but we also need it for quality of life in this area. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a tremendous challenge, but we're stabilized right now, and I'm pleased to see that. But I think we're all anxious about the next chapter.
And so what you mentioned, a long-term fix. What would a long-term fix require in your view?
Well, I'm not a healthcare expert or healthcare management expert, but I certainly think that Our goal must be that we have a full-service hospital here, not only an emergency department and a surgery center, but I would like to see the maternity ward returned. I would want to make sure that we still have behavioral health services available as well. You know, this is important to our community. I think it's difficult to convince people what a great city and great area this is to either have a second home or to make it your primary residence when you've got a hobbled healthcare system. So the hospital can't be everything to everybody, but what we can do is offer a certain basic level of services that people would feel comfortable in living in this area, starting a business or coming here to work and raise a family. That's what's critically important.
You mentioned taking care of vulnerable populations in the Laconia area. So I wanted to mention what Laconia has done for some homeless people. The state school building in Laconia has been used for homeless people who've tested positive for the disease. So I wanted to ask you, what kind of activity have you seen there?
Well, we've seen a very moderate levels of activity. I believe the capacity of the Doobie building and the state school property is anywhere from 25 to 50 patients. Right now, as of yesterday, I believe we had either three or four patients there. A couple people had been released earlier this week. So what I have been very happy to see is a great collaborative effort among our fire department, our police department, and our public health network here in the city to staff and set up this operation. I've also been really pleased after a couple of missteps early on that the governor and the Department of Safety have been tremendous as far as communicating with the city and making sure we laid out 13 points that we wanted from the state before they started to house people here in Laconia. And I was very pleased that the state got back to the city in a timely fashion and agreed to all 13 points, which would assure public safety, would assure that if we had a surge of patients, it wouldn't overwhelm our healthcare network here in the city, and also would assure that those, once they were released from quarantine, were transported back to their home communities where they had originated from. So I've been very pleased with that. Of course, it's an ongoing situation. We haven't seen the numbers that we could have seen, but we're not through this yet either. So it's, I try to monitor it every day.
Mm-hmm. And what's been the community reaction to the use of that site for homeless people who've tested positive?
Well, the initial community reaction wasn't particularly positive. And I think it had to do with, and when I mentioned a couple of missteps early on, it was just in the communication of what the state school property was going to be used for.
What were people afraid of? Were people afraid of something?
I think people had some concerns that no one had informed them that it was going to be used for a homeless population. So they found out through social media, and I found out through social media that it was being considered, and I think people felt a little blindsided. So I think we had to take a couple steps back and get more information from the state. I think we're concerned about we're a relatively healthy community, but because of our aging demographic and our limited capacity at the hospital, we don't have the capacity to handle a surge like some other communities did. So were we going to take a relatively healthy community and make it a hotspot? And if that were the case, could our local hospital handle the surge of patients? We also had some concerns that people might be wandering off the campus there. And so I think to assure people, the Laconia Police Department and our state police and the Department of Safety have been terrific in reassuring people that this is a secured facility. It is a compassionate facility staffed by professionals 24 hours a day, and that there were plans in place if people chose to leave, wanted to leave the facility and go back to their community. So those were the things that we were concerned about.
Listeners, if you live in Laconia or the Lakes region and you want to make a comment or you have a question about how your region is responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We got this note from Pete in Center Harbor who says, "I'm very fortunate that during these troubled times, I have not lost my job as a cook in the Lakes region. I am concerned with opening up too early as the virus hasn't hit its full peak. How can we open up for broad tourism when the virus is just now starting to infect the Midwest, i.e. meat processing plants? As for Bike Week being postponed, I would just like to mention that most of the vendors that participate will be coming from states that have yet to experience a spike in infections. I agree that we need to do what is needed for businesses to open, but I advise caution for a second wave. We also got this comment from someone who wanted to remain anonymous. They say, as a small business owner in the Lakes region who also sees a huge tourism influx in the summer and also is at risk of losing it this year, I nonetheless have to express my concern at even entertaining the concept of Bike Week this year, let alone at the end of August. Even as states reopen, it is irrefutable to say that there will still be no vaccine in widespread use nor herd immunity. Bringing in 500,000 people, largely out-of-staters, effectively adding 25% to our state's population, is itself risky. Doing so, in addition right now, as schools go back, could compound the risk hugely, meaning that we risk reintroducing COVID en masse when our biggest social distancer, the closing of school, ends. I think it is a combination asking for calamity. Andrew Hosmer, want to get your take on those comments from both Anonymous and Pete, who is a cook.
Well, I think Pete really raises the point I discussed early, and that is those that depend on our travel and tourism industry to remain employed. But if we don't balance this property, public health and the economy, we may find ourselves going backwards here and having more long-term negative effects to our economy if it were to open up too early. So I share those concerns certainly with Pete. And second of all, the word calamity is really striking. Because I think that second listener was correct. The idea of opening up too soon and subjecting a vulnerable population to this disease when a second wave may be building may not be the right thing to do. So what we do say here, though, and ultimately it's not up to me as the mayor, but we need to be aware of the data that's being produced from credible sources like epidemiologists, our DHHS department, as well as the CDC, and not let this become politicized. It has to be based on evidence as to whether in a prudent fashion we could reopen the local economy or not. And that's what we will be acutely aware of as we progress through the coming weeks.
What is the financial impact this has had on the city, if any?
Well, right now, I applaud my city councilors and the city manager in Laconia because our budget, as we speak right now, is in very good shape. Although we do anticipate come July 1st, the beginning of the new fiscal year, when taxes, property taxes will be due, we will see an impact, I believe. What that impact looks like right now, it's very difficult to determine. But certainly as this budget year winds down, it's a balanced budget. It's a responsible budget. It is able to fund the needs in this city, and it's a good budget. So I don't anticipate that we're going to have a problem this budget year. Going forward, though, as we begin to discuss and debate our next budget, I think we all need to be acutely aware of a drop in revenues, the possibility perhaps of stimulus 3.5 or 4.0 from the federal government might be able to backfill some drop in revenues, but we can't depend on it. Therefore, when we build this budget, we have to be fiscally conservative, fund our needs, but also be very cautious how we're spending any discretionary funds that we may have. So right now, I say that we're in good shape, all in all. But I think everyone on the council is just very much aware that going forward, we may find that we have to cut some spending in areas that we don't want to, but it might just be necessary so we don't end up in a debt situation that we can't handle.
One of the commenters earlier mentioned the potential danger in bringing so many people to the Lakes region for events like Bike Week. But what about, say, second homeowners, people who have houses on the lake and maybe spend the colder winter months in warmer states, but usually take this time of the year to come back to Laconia? Do you have, or does the city have any guidance for people who may be coming back and planning on spending the summer in Laconia if they've spent the winter elsewhere?
That's a great question. We certainly have seen, and I've heard from a number of people throughout the city, an influx of Massachusetts plates, Connecticut plates, and New York plates, people coming up to second homes and leaving hot spots, we'll say, in the Northeast and coming here to New Hampshire. And I think the only guidance that we ask for is that social distancing is still critically important to flatten the curve. That when people come to New Hampshire, it doesn't mean that the rules have changed. You may be in a safer environment here. There may be fewer cases per capita, which is great, but we're able to achieve that because we have social distanced and taken just basic precautions of hygiene and sort of keeping to ourselves in our own homes and not leaving unless we absolutely have to or if we're essential workers. So
should those folks also self-quarantine for 14 days? That's been the recommendation. You see them on flashing billboards if you cross state lines between here and Vermont, for example.
Well, that's going to be, I think whether we recommend it or not, that's going to be up to individuals, and they should be taking personal responsibility for the fact that they may be asymptomatic and they may come to an area and be contagious. And we want to prevent that. So I just want people to responsibly socially distance. If they have a home here and this is their residence, of course they can come here and stay and come back to their home. On the other hand, it's about personal responsibility and how we behave. We should mask up when we go out, and we should keep that 6-foot distance at a minimum from folks.
We get this note from Martha in Laconia, who writes, Mayor Hosmer mentioned the efforts of Got Lunch to help feed the children of Laconia during this unanticipated time of need. I write the thank you notes to the donors whose generosity makes possible the purchase of the food that Got Lunch distributes. I have written over 100 thank you notes to donors since mid-March, a phenomenal response to an unexpected crisis. Thousands of dollars have poured in, which demonstrates that people in the Lakes region really care about others. Martha continues, thank you to all of those people, the volunteers who get the food to the kids, and to Mayor Hosmer for his ongoing support over the years. So that's the note from Martha, Mayor Hosmer. Want to wrap up with you, but I do want to ask, because Governor Sununu is expected to speak on this later today about the plan for reopening the state's economy. What do you hope to hear from the governor?
What I hope to hear is that, again, as I said earlier, that decisions will be based on credible evidence and data, that we will rely not so much on the political commentary that's out there, but we will have to make difficult decisions based on CDC recommendations and the data produced by epidemiologists. That's really what we need to focus on here, because in the short term, it may be tempting to reopen the economy, but in the long term, ultimately, the health of our citizens here must be primary. So that's, and I really hope that, and going back to Martha, it strikes me that how we show up for one another in these very difficult times is really what matters, and that makes this Laconia community so special.
Laconia Mayor Andrew Hosmer, thank you very much for speaking with me. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Bye-bye now.
This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. And when we come back, we'll dig into the question of how and when to reopen the state of New Hampshire. Governor Sununu, as you've heard, is expected to make an announcement on this today. What do you think should happen? We need to hear from you. Join the conversation. The number, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Or email exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and today we are taking a look at the major concerns this week, including the state of the economy under the stay-at-home order prompted by the COVID-19 pandemic. With me in this part of the program, Anna Brown, Director of Research and Analysis with Citizens Count, and NHPR's Annie Ropeek. Thank you both for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So as we mentioned earlier, Governor Sununu is expected to present a plan later today. He's going to comment on the pace of reopening the state. And listeners, we want to hear from you on this. Your opinion matters. What questions or concerns do you have about reopening New Hampshire's economy? Do you think it's too soon? Do you think it's time to start phasing things in? What do you think? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email your comments. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org. www.governorsununu.org. Now let's hear a little bit of what Governor Sununu had to say earlier this week when he spoke on NHPR's Morning Edition about how he's thinking about developing a plan to reopen.
We will take a phased approach with businesses. We may take a phased approach with the stay-at-home order itself. We'd like to loosen that a little bit, but again, public health always has to be kind of preeminent in our decisions, making sure we don't open ourselves up to enticing folks from Massachusetts to come up here, spread the virus unintentionally, and create a bigger problem for ourselves in the long run.
So a bit of a preview of what we may hear from Governor Sununu later today. But Annie Ropeek, you were able to cover Monday's meeting of the governor's task force that is looking at reopening. That day covered state parks and the tourism industry. What were some of the key points that you heard?
So they're really trying to walk this fine line between protecting public health, trying to maintain some semblance of social distancing and caution while, you know, reopening the state for business in a way. They're trying to reopen some of these state park amenities, outdoor recreation areas. You know, our state parks have mostly remained open during the pandemic so far, but bathrooms, for example, or, you know, some parking lots and other kind of indoor or brick and mortar amenities have been closed. And, you know, those are a lot of the money makers, things like campgrounds. So that's what they're really looking at. In addition to our beaches, you know, which are sort of their own issue that I think we're going to talk about in a little bit. So State Parks Director Phil Bryce presented to legislators at this meeting of the Reopen Task Force on Monday. And the priorities he laid out were really to try to limit crowds and implement a lot more cleaning protocols and ways to protect workers at what they do reopen. So they're going to take a phased approach. They're going to start by trying to reopen some of their main attractions, things that if they're seasonal would open, you know, this month or in the next 6 weeks or so, if not sooner. This would be things like campgrounds, state-owned ATV trails, as well as the seacoast and inland beaches. These things will open, though, under, you know, a lot of new restrictions. So campgrounds, for example, they're going to open fewer campsites, maybe as few as half as many campsites as normal. They're going to limit the size of your group. It'll be online-only reservations. When you get there, you'll have to check in on your smartphone so you don't interact with a worker. And lots more sanitation. They're going to convert all the bathrooms to single or family use only. You know, same for showers. The laundry rooms will be single use only. And all kinds of new signage and ways to enforce that. At the beaches, you may not be allowed to sit on the beach. This is one thing that they're still sort of figuring out. Director Bryce said the options are basically either you'll be allowed to sit, but they need to still sort of figure out how many people the beaches can safely support while they keep their distance, or you may only be allowed to sort of be what they call a transitory visitor, so jogging or walking or surfing or swimming and keep moving. And they'll limit the parking at the beaches. You'll have to reserve picnic tables, all sorts of new systems like that.
So no laying out a blanket possibly, but, you know, you can take a walk on the beach or jog.
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah, okay. Let's go to the phones and talk to Teresa in Moultonboro. Teresa, thanks very much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment was twofold. One, I thought the mayor of Laconia did a fabulous job presenting the dilemma that they have, that we have here in New Jersey, and I think they are being very prudent in delaying Bike Week with the possibility that it may have to be delayed further. My other comment was for Lakes Region General Hospital. I'm a healthcare worker. I have watched the furloughs that have taken place there. I've also read the recent editorial in the Laconia Sun about we need to take a look at the management, because in all those furloughs, never has anybody from their leadership team been let go, which is top heavy, and obviously mismanagement took place because it is falling apart. They're not using, having to do elective surgery is only one issue. They are mismanaged, and I think somebody should be taking a look at the management there.
Worth doing. Thank you very much, Teresa. Really appreciate the call. We also got this note from Anonymous who said, "It's all fine and good to ask out-of-staters to social distance, but that's very unrealistic. Every time I go to the grocery store, there are people who don't wear masks getting out of vehicles with out-of-state plates. They seem to have a false sense of security and are not always thinking of others. Masks in public places should be mandatory if we are to reopen." Annie Ropeek, want to throw that comment to you regarding social distancing and mask wearing. To what extent is that part of the conversation you're hearing at these meetings about potentially opening parks and beaches?
It's a big part of the conversation. Phil Bryce, the state parks director, specifically said they are looking into whether they can require park visitors to wear masks. You know, they're following a lot of the sort of more statewide level guidance for some of these things. For example, their sort of next phase of their reopening plan is going to follow state guidance for hospitality and other tourism businesses. So that would be for things like the Mount Washington Visitor Center and rentals and concessions. And so, you know, as part of that, we may see if there is some sort of statewide mask requirement, or if that guidance gets more stringent, you probably will see that trickle down to the parks as well. They are going to be taking steps to try to screen visitors, just it sounds like visually, or maybe by asking them if they the sort of standard questions we've been hearing asked about, you know, have you had contact with anyone who's sick or have you been sick? And those people could be turned away. But I think, you know, the enforcement question is really an open one still. I think we are seeing already that even with stricter restrictions in place at our state parks and outdoor recreation areas, that it's been hard to manage the crowds. We've heard reports that just last weekend at Mount Monadnock, they turned away 200 cars. They still had maybe 500 people on the mountain. And that was, I think, considered a success. And we've seen reports of lots of out-of-state visitors coming to those trails and parks. Our colleague Dan Tuohy noticed a sign on the highway in Newington heading north the other day that said Tuckerman Ravine is closed. And that seems to be directed at people coming from points south. So, you know, again, easier said than done on keeping those visitors away. And I think the state is, again, trying to walk that fine line of, like, we are kind of trying to welcome people back to our state parks, or we're not trying to do that in opening them. And so, you know, how they're going to kind of make that distinction, I think, really remains to be seen.
We get this note from Bruce who wrote, it is far too soon to open more businesses. The majority of people support waiting longer and protecting public health. Let's recognize those wishes. The virus is the one that should determine opening dates, and new cases are telling us it's not time yet. Let's do what we need to do now so we needn't go through this again in the fall. That's the note from Bruce. We also got a note from Judy, who writes, as a year-round resident of the Lakes region, I think it is unconscionable to not cancel Bike Week 2020. The influx of people from areas all over the country is too much of a risk to the health and safety of those who call this area home. It is too close to the start of school. LRGH is most likely not able to handle the increase in numbers that could occur, and it will interfere with regular vacation events like Mount Washington. Take a break. Be smart. That's the comment from Judy. And let's talk to Ed in Guilford. Ed, thank you very much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, good morning. Thank you. I'm just curious as to businesses, in particular restaurants, will owners be required to have employees tested before they can open or before someone can be employed in a restaurant?
Good question. Those of us who really miss restaurants might want to know the answer to that. Let's turn to you, Anna Brown. What have you heard about not just restaurants, but testing capacity? Those two things seem to apply to Ed's question.
Absolutely. And so Governor Sununu has made clear that vastly ramping up testing is a top priority in the state, which is consistent with the CDC guidelines and other opening plans in other states, because if you don't know who's sick, then it's really hard to contain any other outbreak. So, for example, we're seeing now in LA that anyone, whether or not you're symptomatic, is going to be available to get tested. And I think that that's the dream here in New Hampshire, you know, and I think Lori Chibonette from the Department of Health and Human Services talked about her, she would love to see an instant test for anyone visiting a long-term care facility, similar to, you know, the pinprick you might do for a diabetes sugar test, blood sugar test. And so increased testing, I think everyone wants to do it. It's a question of how fast can we get there as a state? And certainly last week, they really brought in the guidelines of who can get a test, you know, in terms of you don't have to have those really severe symptoms. You don't have to be a frontline worker to be eligible for a test. We haven't seen anything in particular about requiring a negative coronavirus test to work, for example, in a restaurant, but there has been a lot of information about general guidelines for screening workers, similar to the guidelines that Annie was talking about for entering a park in terms of, you know, temperature checks or have you had contact with anyone who's sick. And then we still, of course, would need to have in place lots of protections for workers who want to stay home because they're symptomatic. We don't want people who are sick to be going to work.
Yeah, Peter, if I can jump in on that.
Please do.
So we also, at the Reopen Task Force meeting, heard from the private tourism industry. So the New Hampshire Travel Council, their lobbyist presented. And I'm looking at his presentation, and he says, you know, we may consider health screenings at tourism attractions and hospitality facilities. If recommended by the CDC, they could do temperature scans for employees and guests. But he notes, the quote is, the effectiveness of identifying an infected person is very unlikely. The use is a preventative measure to encourage stay home on sick compliance. So I think there's a real sense that it's a little bit of a game of whack-a-mole, you know, just for every test that you can do or every person you can catch trying to come in who appears sick. There may be others who are asymptomatic or who don't get tested because they come in another way to these facilities. And certainly for workers, you know, we've seen in other states that there is not widespread testing for restaurant workers, for example, returning to work. I just heard a story about that from Texas yesterday. So I think that's a real government mandate that would need to come down, and I don't know that we've seen that yet.
There is certainly pressure beginning to mount from sectors of the economy that are hoping to get back to work sooner rather than later. Some New Hampshire hairstylists are petitioning the governor to allow them to reopen and see one client at a time. Vanessa Perrin started the petition. She owns Vanessa's Salon in West Lebanon, and she says she gets why beauty shops aren't considered essential businesses. Perrin spoke with NHPR earlier this week.
I mean, I'd be the first to say, okay, if I had to pay, if money is my issue, then my hair would probably have to go. But people still want their hair done, and so, and we still have to work. We have to earn a living, too.
So that's Vanessa Perrin, owner of Vanessa's Salon in West Lebanon. She says under her proposal, stylists and barbers would see one client at a time, no more than 10 people in the salon at once, and everyone wears masks and sanitizes in between clients. Anna Brown, to your knowledge, are other sectors of the economy pushing in the way that this representative of salons is?
Well, this is really interesting to me because haircuts in particular seem to be one of the first things that the task force is focusing on for their reopening guidelines. And a lot of people believe that there's going to be this afternoon going to be guidelines that they're announced to have people coming back as similar to that petition, in terms of limiting the number of people in the salon, wearing masks and gloves, only one person at a time, and various sanitizing requirements. So I think that for some reason, I think that this sort of taps into some innate human need because it seems to be something a lot of people are talking about. And in fact, when you look at Google search trends over the coronavirus epidemic, there was a huge surge in people searching for how to cut hair at home. This seems to be something that people just really, really want. It's that sense of normalcy. So for me personally, it's been interesting, you know, that that has been such a top priority. And then I would say the other sectors that we see that are really clamoring to reopen are restaurants and hotels, are elective procedures at healthcare facilities. And then we're looking at campgrounds and other outdoor recreation like we were talking about earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm. We got this note from Christopher in Manchester who says, Governor Sununu has been basing his decisions on science and facts, and I trust he will continue to do so. Dr. Chan and Commissioner Chibinet have been very impressive at news conferences. Based on our close connection to Massachusetts, I believe it should be in line with Governor Baker's mid-May date and then reassess if necessary as that date approaches. That's the comment from Christopher in Manchester. And Rose Marie wrote in to say, I read in the Concord Monitor that we were the state with the lowest per capita testing. I understand Texas is second worst. I'm not comfortable opening anything up without better data. Testing, tracing, and some kind of treatment will get us through because there's a vaccine to present a second wave. Also, people seem cavalier that they should just get the virus and get immunity. I'm concerned about unexpected healthcare costs if people get sick in larger numbers. There seems to be an illusion that all costs for COVID-19 are covered, and that simply isn't the case. So a lot of concerns there raised by Rose Marie. Thank you very much. Really appreciate the call. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. We're also going to get insight on how things are faring in Vermont. Of course, New Hampshire is not an island. We border several states, and there's no prohibition that people can cross state lines. So how are the states doing things, and are they doing things in concert? We'll take a look, and if you have questions or comments about that, let us know. 1-800-892-6477. Again, 1-800-892-NHPR. We'd love to bring you into the conversation. You can also email exchange@nhpr.org. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on the Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and we will be right back. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on the Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Reopening New Hampshire's economy requires consideration of a variety of factors: testing, death rates, the extent to which things like contact tracing can be helpful in slowing the spread of the coronavirus. One important factor is what neighboring states are planning to do. And for a look at what Vermont has been planning, we turn now to VPR reporter Peter Hirschfeld. Welcome to the program.
We still miss you, Peter, and it's good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours as well. Yeah, I miss you guys as well. So, Peter, tell us, to what extent have Governor Chris Sununu and Governor Phil Scott in Vermont coordinated their COVID-19 decisions?
Quite a bit, it would appear. Governor Scott has talked a lot about the fact that he's in regular contact with all of the New England governors. And if you look back at when key decisions have been made since COVID-19 first arrived in our region, it's pretty remarkable the extent to which New Hampshire and Vermont's decisions have correlated with each other, whether it's the stay home order, the order to close schools, the order to close restaurants and bars. They have really been in sync, usually to the day, sometimes to the hour, in terms of making these announcements. So I think they see some value in being coordinated as much as possible.
So how has Governor Scott described how he will go about reopening the economy there?
So just about everybody in Vermont now is familiar with this new metaphor that Phil Scott coined a few weeks ago, in which he refers to the Vermont economy as the spigot. And he says that as public health conditions allow, he will begin turning that spigot one quarter turn at a time. And so far, he's done that a couple times, but he's made very clear this is not going to be a sudden reopening of that entire valve where we see all kinds of economic activity starting back up. He said, we're going to do just a tiny bit. We're going to take some time, see what sort of effect that has on the rate of growth of COVID-19 in the state, and then let that experience inform whether or not we do another quarter turn or maybe even ratchet back a little bit.
And what is the situation like in Vermont? Are there many cases there of COVID-19?
You know, we just had our first day yesterday, Wednesday, where no new cases were reported over a 24-hour period. Now, that's one day. That's not a trend. But it is in keeping with the general trend that we've seen over the past 2 to 3 weeks, where the doubling rate for the number of cases has increased. At the rate we're at right now, it would take over a month for Vermont to see a doubling in the number of cases it's had. We believe that we are past the peak number of cases. Public health officials say we're past the peak demand on hospital resources. So we are doing far better here than what our neighbors in New York and Massachusetts, for example, are experiencing. And I think our curve is actually even flatter than what you're seeing in New Hampshire right now.
Mm-hmm. And so what's the biggest concern for those managing the pandemic in Vermont?
Boy, public health is the biggest concern, but a close second is the impact that this is having on Vermonters, 90,000 of which have filed unemployment claims since this pandemic began. Now, that's a combination of people who are employed conventionally and filing unemployment through normal means, but also self-employed Vermonters, about 10,000 of which have become newly eligible for the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. It's been fits and starts getting those checks out. Some people have been waiting for many weeks, and in some cases are still waiting. But this has had and is going to continue to have a really profound effect on the economy at large here, but also the personal economies in households across the state. And that is definitely weighing on the minds of public officials here.
Mm-hmm. And given that so many people have applied for unemployment benefits in Vermont, how's the system working? Are people applying for benefits and getting them in a timely manner, by and large?
No, not by and large. Now, they have instituted a number of new measures, including hiring a contractor that has brought about 70 bodies into that system. Those folks are operating call centers. They're trying to process claims. We had a pretty severe crash with a decades-old computer system that had been set up to handle unemployment claims. It turns out that was not sufficient to handle the volume, the unprecedented volume that we saw in the wake of these closures of businesses across the state. Some of those checks are starting to find their way to unemployed Vermonters, but in some cases, people are still waiting.
Okay. And how have Vermonters responded to stay-at-home orders there?
You know, for the most part, people have been pretty compliant. There's an understanding, I think, a collective understanding that has been hammered home by Governor Phil Scott and other state leaders here that this is in individuals' hands as to whether or not we're going to see a spike in the number of cases of COVID-19, whether or not we're going to see a resurgence of COVID-19 in the state. And you walk into most grocery stores around here, this is an unscientific sample, but you see face masks. You go to places where people would customarily be congregating this time of year, spring, warm weather coming, you don't see large crowds. So for now, at least, people seem to be falling in line with these stay-home orders.
Okay. And what is the expectation in Vermont for how things may unfold there in the next month or so?
You know, Phil Scott has been asked that question over and over again. He has three press conferences a week, some of which last up to 2 hours, where reporters from around the state ask him variations on a theme of, when are we going to be able to reopen? When are restaurants going to be able to reopen? And he says, we just don't know. And the other thing he's cautioning folks against is thinking that when those operations do reopen, that they're going to look anything like they did before COVID-19 came. He's made it really clear that the economy that you knew before the coronavirus pandemic is not something you're going to see again likely until we have a vaccine.
VPR's Peter Hirschfeld, thank you very much for letting us know what's happening in Vermont. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter.
This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. We'll turn back now to Anna Brown, Director of Research and Analysis with Citizens Count, and NHPR's Annie Ropeek, and also your calls and emails. If you have a question or a comment about the state and the state's policy towards reopening or something else related to the COVID-19 pandemic news of the week, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or you can email NHPR exchange at nhpr.org. And let's talk first to Catherine in Milford. Catherine, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a big fan. I listen every day. I am an immunosuppressed person, and I am just very concerned about reopening because if I caught this, it could be deadly to me.
And you're urging people to follow what the state is advising or go above and beyond that? What do you think?
I want the testing to be way up, and I want the disease to be gone as much as possible before we would even consider it.
Well, Catherine, thank you very much. Really important to hear from folks like you who are at increased risk of something terrible happening because of COVID-19. We also get this note from Melody, who says we must look at that which has been successful or not in terms in those who are ahead of us in this debacle and learn the lessons they have already suffered. We need to remain vigilant and prudent. Healthcare workers still do not have sufficient PPE. What makes us think that money and business takes precedent over human life? Stimulus payments should be following the thought of Andrew Yang. Feed the economy from the bottom up and all will fall into place. That's the comment from Melody, which may make it worth talking a little bit about the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery, Anna Brown, because it's been looking at ways to leverage CARES Act funding, money that has to some extent funded from the bottom up, though not entirely. Anna, how has the state been looking at dispersing this money?
Sure. So that committee has been meeting frequently and hearing from all different sectors, from childcare providers to healthcare to hotels to the music hall in Portsmouth. And they are looking to start dispersing money in May, but they haven't given a clear timeline. So they are looking probably, you know, at some sort of low-cost loan program, a little bit similar to the Paycheck Protection Program that was at the federal level, but sort of that New Hampshire solution where there's going to be different flexibility, maybe so that restaurants don't have to put as much of the money into payroll since they have very high overhead head costs. And the other thing going on there, of course, is we have a little bit of tension between Democrats and the governor on how that money is going to get spent. Democratic legislative leaders did try, of course, to sue so that the legislative fiscal committee would have say in that funding. Their suit was dismissed. But the Senate Democrats did release their plan for how they would like to see the funds spent. And so that also can give us a preview of some ideas of what are going around in terms of extending unemployment benefits again, a business relief fund, additional property tax assistance, housing assistance to help people cover rent or mortgage payments that they missed out on during that. So it's a really broad open field, but really kind of think of it almost as a microcosm of that CARES Act that happened at the federal level.
And to some extent, Anna, Democrats want to use some of this COVID relief money to help plug the general fund in the budget, right?
Yes, absolutely. And this is going to be a big debate if there's another federal package that comes out, because right now the federal government is being very strict about how these money can be spent. And they're saying it has to be special coronavirus related expenses. So that means the state can't just cover lost tax revenue. They're expecting way lower business tax receipts. People aren't going to necessarily be making property tax payments, and meals and rooms tax is also, of course, tanking while our restaurants and hotels are closed. Originally, Democrats said, all right, we can use some of these funds to cover that difference because the tax revenue is lower due to coronavirus. The federal government came out and said, no, you can't do that. And Sununu also, I think, wanted a little more flexibility than we got, but that's going to be a challenge. So they are looking at dispersing funds to county, town, city governments related to the coronavirus expenditures, whether it's overtime or special family and medical leave for employees, extra welfare payments. But they aren't going to be able to just make up for lost tax revenue that is going to impact our states and municipalities.
One more story to talk about before we have to wrap up here. Annie Ropeek, you've been covering for NHPR that the Nashua Telegraph will scale back its print editions to Sundays only as the coronavirus continues to reshape the local news industry here in New Hampshire. So how would you describe the impact of COVID-19 on the news industry here?
Yeah, I mean, it's been enough to make this sort of one of the beats I've picked up during coronavirus is the impact to local news. It's been rough, you know, especially local newspapers. They rely so much on ad revenue, and a lot of that comes from local business, local events, you know, life happening normally, and that's just not going on right now. And so we've seen local papers across the state losing ad revenue really rapidly as their towns kind of shut down. A lot of them have laid off staff or cut back production or taken steps like the Nashua Telegraph did this week, where they said they'll now only print on Sundays, that edition will be delivered on Saturdays, and they're going to really try to funnel people to their online edition. You know, the letter from the editor about this was quite interesting. It was they're trying to sort of spin it, I guess, as that they're funneling people to the web because that's the best place to be covering a situation like this. You know, they're trying to respond more quickly, answer people's questions more directly, provide more resources, and that the web is the best place to do that, which I think we're finding is true in some ways, but also, you know, it is a sign of the times that they're having to preserve or reserve resources right now, and that's, you know, causing them to have to cut back their print editions. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, we're watching to see how the local news industry in New Hampshire, which has really, you know, risen incredibly to the challenge of covering this, to see how they'll weather this and hopefully come out stronger on the other side.
So I want to ask both of you really quickly as we wrap up what you will be looking at or reporting on studying in the coming few weeks. We'll start with you, Annie.
Well, I'm covering this outdoor recreation stuff a lot. I'm waiting to see how the state parks and especially the state beaches reopen, considering some stories about those surfers in Rye who have continued to be out there, and Rye police have had to chase them off every day, and wanting to see what's going on with that. And also looking, you know, continuing to look at the connections and parallels between climate change and climate response and coronavirus, kind of what the state's going to learn from this about climate change, what new habits people might take with them after this is over.
And how about you, Anna Brown? What will you be looking at in the coming weeks?
in the coming weeks, I'm definitely still keeping an eye on the legislature and seeing if they're going to be able to come back in session to deal with the roughly 700 bills that are still sitting out there for 2020, or if we're going to have to look at some sort of solution with those bills next year. And kind of related to that is the election preparations that are happening, because the filing date for state candidates is in early June. So that's just a month away. And so we're already looking at some changes to that process, maybe.
We spent the whole hour not talking about a single election. I can't believe it. Anna Brown, Director of Research and Analysis with Citizens Count. Thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you, Peter.
And NHPR's Annie Ropeek, thank you for being on the program as well.
Thanks for having me.
So that's it for this week. I appreciate everybody who wrote in and called in today to help enrich this conversation. The conversation continues online at nhpr.org and on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to Facebook and searching for NHPR Exchange. The show's producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Michael Brindley is our program manager. Jane Vaughn is production fellow for The Exchange. And our regular theme music was composed by Bob Lord. I'm Peter B. Yellow. Thank you very much for listening, and have a great weekend.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.